This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Listen to verse 255 of chapter Baqarah, recited by Mr. Ali Askar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahu la ilaha illa
وَهُوَ الْعَلِيُّ الْعَظِيمُ.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Allah is He, besides whom there is no God, the ever-living, the self-subsisting, by whom all subsist. Slumber does not overtake Him, nor sleep. Whatever is in the heavens, and whatever is in the earth, is His. Who is He that can intercede with Him, but by His permission? He knows what is before them and what is behind them, and they cannot comprehend anything out of His knowledge except what He pleases. His knowledge extends over the heavens and the earth, and the preservation of them both tires Him not, and He is the Most High, the Great.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Health Minister says U.S. unilateral sanctions have adversely affected the fight against the coronavirus pandemic in Iran. The U.S. Defense Department blacklists four more Chinese companies, accusing them of being controlled by the Chinese military. Also coming up, the U.S. state of California announces new strict stay-at-home orders amid a dramatic rise in the number of coronavirus cases and fatalities. World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour: the Iranian health minister says U.S.'s unilateral sanctions against his country have adversely affected the fight against the pandemic in Iran.
The unilateral coercive measures imposed by the government of the United States have negatively affected the process of combating the pandemic in my country. Unilateral illegal measures hampers easy access of the people to basic medical items and requirements, and thus endangers health of Iranian citizens.
Saeed Namaki made the remark in an address to the United Nations General Assembly. He said it is important that all nations have timely and cost-effective access to medicines and medical supplies without any discrimination. But he added U.S. restrictions on forex reserves are hampering efforts to supply medicines and medical equipment. Washington has imposed what the U.S. officials call unprecedented sanctions against Tehran since it withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal in 2018. Iran calls the sanctions economic terrorism and says they are targeting ordinary people. Iran's envoy to the Vienna-based international organizations has called on the International Atomic Energy Agency to clearly and unconditionally condemn the assassination of nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. In a letter to the IAEA, Kazim Gharib Abadi said there is clear evidence showing Israel's involvement in this terrorist act. He said the act is an obvious terrorism carried out with the aim of jeopardizing international peace and security and bringing instability to the region. Ghareeb Abadi noted that the recent assassination is a continuation of the series of terror attacks against Iranian nuclear scientists that started a decade ago. The Iranian envoy called on the international community to fulfill its commitments in fighting terrorism and condemning such inhumane actions. Fakhrizadeh's assassination has drawn condemnations from many countries. And Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has called on Western powers to condemn the assassination of prominent Iranian nuclear physicist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh and effectively support the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. He made the remarks in an address to the sixth edition of the International Meeting of the Mediterranean Dialogue, known as MED, held by Italy. Max Cevili reports from Rome.
Iran's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Javad Zarif, attended the sixth edition of the Rome MED Mediterranean Dialogues Conference, which is being held in a digital format from November 25 to December 4. This year, the initiative, promoted by the Italian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and by ISPI, the Italian Institute for International Political Studies, has been focused on the topic Beyond COVID-19, Navigating Solutions for Post-Pandemic Times, featuring over 100 experts and political leaders. In his address, Zarif touched upon a number of issues of international relevance, spurred on by questions from Elie Gerrenmayer from the European Council of Foreign Relations and Paolo Magri, Executive Vice President of ISPI. The top diplomat opened with an update on the coronavirus crisis in Iran.
The situation in Iran is pretty bad. Unfortunately, we're suffering from something more than the rest of the world is, and that is an economic war. This is way beyond restrictions. The United States even prevents us from using our own money in different countries to pay COVAX for the vaccine. If they say otherwise, they're simply lying.
Later, the discussion shifted on the nuclear deal signed in Vienna in 2015.
Earlier this week, some of Europe's leading diplomats urged the members of the E3, France, Germany and the UK, to act quickly to set out a roadmap for Iran and the US to return to compliance with the JCPOA. There's a real risk, experts say, that the efforts can be disrupted by those forces who have been working hard to escalate tensions between Tehran and Washington.
The Europeans have not been able to implement their part of the deal. The Europeans say that we are in full compliance. They're simply not. Implementation, compliance, means that they have to have effects for these actions. And we don't see an effect. We don't see any European company in Iran. We do not see any European country buying oil from Iran.
Zarif also commented on the assassination in a terrorist attack near the Iranian capital Tehran of prominent nuclear physicist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. The future of the Iran nuclear deal will also be discussed with the European Union High Representative for Foreign Affairs Josep Borrell on Friday, the final day of the conference. Max Civil, Rome.
Turning to other news now, the administration, pardon me, of U.S. President Donald Trump has added four more Chinese companies to a blacklist of alleged Chinese military-controlled companies. The U.S. Department of Defense listed China's top chip maker, SMIC, oil giant, CNOOC, construction technology company, and International Engineering Consulting Corporation. That brings the total number of companies blacklisted to 35. A new executive order by Trump, which will come into effect next year, prohibits U.S. investors from trading with the blacklisted firms. The listing is sure to cause more tension, as Washington and Beijing are already at loggerheads over a range of trade and foreign policy issues. Previously, China threatened to produce its own blacklist of U.S. companies. Allies of U.S. President Donald Trump have sought an emergency order from the Supreme Court to block the certification of presidential election results in Pennsylvania. The plaintiffs filed the motion on Thursday. They want the U.S. Supreme Court to issue an injunction to halt any remaining steps in the election certification. Trump's allies did so to be able to develop their own arguments. They had already filed a suit challenging expanded mail-in voting in Pennsylvania, but the Supreme Court there rejected it on Saturday. The northeastern state is among a key battleground states where Trump's Democratic rival Joe Biden has won the presidential vote. Trump says Biden won the last month election because it was rigged. Staying in the United States, which has set a single-day record for new infections from coronavirus with more than 203,000 cases. The figure was registered by Johns Hopkins University on Thursday. New deaths were over 2,700. Overall confirmed cases in the U.S. have now passed 14.1 million. Total fatalities are above 276,000. Also on Thursday, the number of hospitalizations passed 100,000. That was a new record. Texas, California, and Florida are the worst hit U.S. states by the pandemic. In California, authorities have announced new restrictions to contain the disease.
Okay, we are announcing and introducing a regional stay-at-home order in the state of California, fundamentally predicated on the need to stop gathering with people outside of your household, to do what you can to keep most of your activities outside. Deaths. Just in the last 14 days, close to 1,000 Californians have lost their lives due to COVID-19. The bottom line is, if we don't act now, our hospital system will be overwhelmed. If we don't act now, we'll continue to see a death rate climb, more lives lost.
Newsom added public places, including their hair salons, will remain closed for 3 weeks. Meanwhile, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the U.S. could see up to 200,000 additional deaths in the next 2 months. CDC officials say they expect two vaccines to be approved by the end of the year. They say either one or both of them will be available by February. And the projected winner of the U.S. presidential election, Joe Biden, says he will ask Americans to wear masks for the first 100 days after he takes office.
It is important that we, in fact, the president and the vice president, we set the pattern by wearing masks. But beyond that, where the federal government has authority, I'm going to issue a standing order that in federal buildings you have to be masked. And in transportation, interstate transportation, you must be masked in airplanes and buses, et cetera. And so it's a matter of, and I think my inclination, Jake, is on the first day I'm inaugurated to say I'm going to ask the public for 100 days to mask. Just 100 days to mask. Not forever, 100 days. And I think we'll see a significant reduction if we occur that.
Biden said he has asked top health expert Anthony Fauci to be a chief medical advisor and part of his COVID response team. Biden said he supports Congress passing a comprehensive coronavirus relief package before he takes office. Biden and President Donald Trump have different approaches to the COVID crisis in the U.S. Trump has fought many of the recommendations, including mask wearing. That's while Biden has followed guidelines before and after the November 3rd presidential election. Now, tensions intensify between Brussels and London over Britain's move to begin the COVID-19 vaccination of its population next week. The EU says it will not rush into the process of administering the jab until the bloc's regulatory authority deems it to be safe. Jerome Hughes has the details.
The fallout from the British government's decision to begin mass COVID-19 vaccination next week continues. The EU is certainly not happy about the move, and comments made by a government minister on London's LBC radio have only fueled the flames.
We've obviously got the best medical regulators, much better than the French have, much better than the Belgians have, much better than the Americans have. That doesn't surprise me at all, because we're a much better country.
The head of the European Commission's media service has been responding.
We are definitely not in the game of comparing regulators across countries, nor on commenting on claims as to who is better. This is not a football competition. We are talking about the life and the health of people.
The British Education Secretary's remarks haven't gone down well either with members of the public we have been speaking to in Brussels.
It's ridiculous and stupid, and it's not worthy at all. So why they want to put in confrontation with the EU authorities? So is just to provoke more tension among the population or what?
The EU's regulator for vaccines is the European Medicines Agency. It wanted the UK to wait for its approval, given that Britain is still bound by the Brexit transition period. Authorities in Berlin are pointing out the vaccine that will be rolled out in the UK was developed by German firm BioNTech using EU research funding and is being produced in Belgium. Citizens we have been talking to believe the British government is trying to make up for its disastrous handling of the pandemic.
Now to do this step, to be kind of the first to do it, so I don't think that it's well thought through either. It's just, maybe it's like a PR move, it's a move from the government to show, yeah, we have it under control, but in the end, I don't know.
EU Health Commissioner Stella Kariakides says the delay in approving the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is about winning the public's trust so that they actually take the jab.
The European Medicines Agency says it will make a decision on the authorization of the Pfizer vaccine by the 29th of December at the latest. But is this bolstering the EU's credibility in the eyes of citizens or eroding it? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Elsewhere, Bangladesh has sent another batch of Rohingya refugees to a remote island despite a call by rights groups to halt the transfer. A Bangladeshi naval official says more than 1,600 refugees have been sailed to Bashan Char Island. They will join another 400 being moved on Thursday. Dhaka says it is only moving Rohingya refugees who are willing to go. It also says the transfer will ease overcrowding in camps home to more than 1 million Rohingya. But rights groups, including prominent ones like Amnesty International, want a halt to the relocation. They say it may be forced and involuntary. Hundreds of thousands of Myanmar's Rohingya Muslims fled to Bangladesh in August 2017 after a brutal crackdown by the government in their homeland.
These are Rohingya Muslims, a long maltreated group who is denied citizenship at home in Myanmar. They began fleeing their homes in Rakhine State after waves of attacks by Myanmar's army and Buddhist mobs. A citizenship law in 1982 stripped them of their nationality, making them one of the world's largest stateless communities. While there have been waves of migrations to Bangladesh since the 1970s, none was as rapid and massive as the one in August 2017 that turned the spotlight on the Rohingya crisis around the world. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims were violently uprooted in the months that followed, driven by a brutal military crackdown that killed thousands of them. What happened in August 2017 was so horrific that the United Nations calls it genocide and a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. Over 700,000 Rohingya fled to Bangladesh. Thousands more sought refuge in India and other neighboring countries. Those who survived tell stories of burning villages, murder, rape, and babies being thrown into fires. Myanmar's military officials claimed that what happened to the villages were a counter-offensive aimed at uprooting terrorism. But the United Nations slammed the army's actions as clearly disproportionate and without regard for basic principles of international law. Today, Bangladesh alone is home to nearly a million Rohingya refugees. At least half of those who arrived in the country were children. These people now live in cramped temporary housing in the district of Cox's Bazar, waiting for a day to return home. The Rohingya want justice. They want those who committed the crimes against them to be held accountable. Myanmar's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, has been accused of failing to protect the minority group. Suu Kyi even rejected a UN report about the military's violence and defended her government's actions in the Rakhine State.
Myanmar requests the court to remove the case from its list. In the alternative, to reject the request for the indication of provisional measures submitted by the Gambia.
There were also talks of Rohingya repatriation, which never happened. Firstly, because Myanmar's government is unwilling to accept the refugees. And secondly, due to Rohingya Muslims fearing for their safety if they returned to their country. A UN fact-finding mission in Myanmar says approximately 600,000 Rohingya are still inside the country, living under the threat of genocide. Given Myanmar's leaders' reluctance to address the issue, the minority group's fate is a major cause for concern that is only being voiced by a selected group of countries around the world.
Elsewhere, French Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin has announced the greater scrutiny for nearly 80 mosques in the coming days as part of an unprecedented measures against separatism. He added that some of them could be closed as a result of the inspection. Murtaza Jaffer has more in this report.
The French government has launched a new wave of measures in their effort to combat so-called Islamist separatism. 76 mosques up and down the country have been flagged as potential hotspots where extremist ideologies are being peddled. Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin announced the deportation of 66 undocumented migrants suspected of radicalization. In the past few weeks, France has enforced the closure of the Muslim charity Baraka City, as well as the civil rights group, the Collective Against Islamophobia in France. Amnesty International described the move as shocking, with a chilling effect on all groups trying to battle racism. The latest measures come after a series of terror attacks that have killed a number of civilians. However, many Muslims believe there is a sense of collective punishment. France is home to the largest Muslim community in Europe, but issues over Islamophobia and racism have meant the large minority can struggle with social mobility. Such issues have been exacerbated by politicians. President Emmanuel Macron came under significant criticism when he described the religion of Islam as being in crisis across the world. Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin has also used language such as enemy within. The government have also thrown their weight behind blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad while cracking down on criticism of Zionist ideologies as anti-Semitic.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kHz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kHz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
The Epic of 8-Year Holy Defense.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, if you remember, we discussed the implementation of the paragraphs of UN Security Council Resolution 598 after the acceptance of 1975 Algiers Accord. Thus, the Iraqi forces pulled out of the Iranian soil and the POWs were exchanged. Therefore, then, UN Secretary General Javier Perez de Coya put paragraph 6 of the resolution on the agenda, which pertained to the initiator of war and the aggressor. The UN chief, after reviewing the documents of Iran and Iraq, named Saddam as the initiator of the war. The declaration of Iraq as the aggressor was a great victory for the Iranian nation. Paragraph 7 of the resolution was also important.
This paragraph explained the damages inflicted upon the two countries. Therefore, due to the determination of the aggressor, it was Iraq which had to pay to Iran. Following a series of negotiations between Iran and the UN Secretary General for implementation of paragraph 7 of the UNSC Resolution 598, a UN delegation headed by the Deputy of UN Secretary General, Abdulrahim Farah, arrived in Tehran on May 31, 1991. The delegation took several trips to Tehran within 6 months and traveled to different parts of Iran to take aerial photos and examine the land closely. The UN delegation prepared two detailed reports on the damages caused by Saddam's army and delivered it to the UN chief. Dekoya handed the report and the result on determination of indemnity to the UNSC. According to the report, 5 Iranian provinces had been involved in the war and 11 other provinces were attacked by the Iraqi army. 50 cities and 4,000 villages had also been harmed in the war. Totally, 2/3 of the Iranian population had been subjected to the war. The UN report had made it clear that Iraq had cut 500,000 date palms and had carried out massive destruction on the Iranian soil. The UN delegation estimated the direct damages of Iran to be $99 billion and the indirect losses to amount to $150 billion. But the Islamic Republic of Iran announced its losses to be $1,000 billion. Although the amount of Iran's losses was officially announced by the United Nations, the UNSC Resolution 598 had not designated any mechanism for payment of the losses. Saddam invaded Kuwait 2 years after the end of his war against Iran. This move urged the Western and Arab regimes and media to admit some of the realities that they would not think of revealing even years after the end of the 8-year imposed war. These media confessed that the financial aid of the West to the Ba'athist regime in Baghdad not only contributed to the fire of war, they resulted in myriads of crimes and heavy losses during the war. The London-based Daily Observer, admitting the funneling of financial assistance to the Iraqi regime by the Western and Eastern regimes, wrote on September 23, 1990, that if the Saudi regime, along with Europe and Soviet Union, had not dispatched military forces, equipment and money, Iran would not have sustained that much of losses and damages during the war. Voice of America said on February 12, 1991, that it was Iraq and not Iran that enjoyed massive military and financial foreign helps. These helps enabled Saddam to create a war machine. 8 years later, when ceasefire was set up between the two countries, the Iraqi army exceeded 1 million. This means that the Iraqi dictator had managed to quadruple his military forces within 8 years, while the money for this was secured by the Saudi and Kuwaiti regimes. Not only these two regimes bought the Soviet Union, France, West Germany and Japan, and the United States of America had also assisted the Iraqi regime. Voice of America, in another report on September 28, 1990, disclosed the U.S. effort for removal of the Ba'athist regime in Iraq from the list of the sponsors and supporters of terrorism. It said that in 1983, the U.S. deleted the name of Iraq from the country supporting terrorism. Then suddenly, international credits and commercial helps started to be sent to Iraq. Christian Science Monitor divulged Washington financial credits to the Ba'athist regime and wrote that, in the years 1985 to 1990, the U.S. Bank of Exports and Imports granted $260 million credit to Iraq to maintain its needs from the U.S. The Daily put the securing of financial needs of the Iraqi regime by the U.S. in the years 1987 to 1989 at $1 billion. Another part of the confessions were related to the U.S. role in the chemical crimes of the Iraqi regime. British Daily Herald Tribune, quoting from Arthur Schallinger, aide to the former American President John F. Kennedy, wrote on December 17, 1990, that while Saddam was going to launch such an operation, meaning chemical attack, the loans granted by American banks to Iraq for purchasing of agricultural products amounted to $1 billion. In addition to the Western governments, Arab regimes too, through their full support for Saddam. The Voice of America reported on February 12, 1991, that the Persian Gulf Sheikhdoms secured nearly $30 billion, more than half of Iraq's financial needs. The fabricated Zionist regime's radio revealed on July 23, 1990, that Kuwait had given billions of dollars of aid to Saddam in the war against Iran. It made it clear that Saddam had borrowed approximately $60 billion foreign loans to continue the war against Iran. At least $40 billion of this money had been given by Arab regimes, including Kuwait, which gave $14 billion. Voice of America also said that Kuwait, in order to support Iraq after 1986, overloaded the global markets with oil in a bid to prevent the oil price hike from $15 to $17 per barrel and decrease Iran's oil revenues. Kuwaiti economic expert Fawaz Badr said at a conference in UN on December 7, 1990, that Kuwait had helped Iraq almost $15 billion. He stressed that this support was apart from the assistance in terms of oil. The Saudi regime was another supporter and comrade in crime of the Iraqi dictator Saddam against the Islamic Republic of Iran. The financial assistance of Riyadh to the Ba'athist regime in Baghdad were so high that the Saudi defense minister in those days, Khalid bin Sultan bin Aziz, said, "My country would provide the drinks of Iraqi army." VOA reported on August 14, 1990, that the Saudi regime had given billions of dollars to Saddam in the war against Iran. Associated Press, too, on the same day, quoting the Saudi monarch Fahd, said, "If Iraq says that it has sacrificed its forces, we have also been involved with money, advanced weapons, and international cooperation." The Saudi state TV, in a report, admitted the regime's financial aid to Iraq, saying, "Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and United Arab Emirates granted their entire financial aid to Saddam during the war." On January 15, 1991, Reuters, quoting Fahd, announced the exact figure of Saudi regime's financial aid to Iraq as $27 billion in form of the military and economic assistance. As for the Western regime's aid to the criminal Iraqi ruler Saddam during the eight-year imposed war, one of the Western media wrote, "One of the NATO bases in the center of France was the place of loading Antonov aircrafts of the Iraqi Air Force. These aircrafts would take cluster bombs, fuses, and radar equipment to Iraq. The French spying apparatuses estimated in 1986 that if Paris would quit its aid to Iraq for 3 weeks, Iraq would be defeated. Thus, during the eight-year imposed war, the Iranian valiant youth fought not only against Saddam's army, but against scores of its supporters in various parts of the world who were complicit in each and every crime that the Iraqi army committed."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ministry.
A truck bomb, then a hail of bullets. And just like that, Iran's top nuclear physicist was assassinated. Martin Mohsen Fakhrizadeh is not the first prominent Iranian scientist to be targeted in the streets of Tehran while going back home after a normal day at work, or while leaving their family household on their way to work. What is new, though, in the targeting of Martin Fakhrizadeh was blatantly foretold 2 years ago by Israeli regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who revealed Mohsen Fakhrizadeh as the head of Project Ahmad, while literally telling the world to remember his name. Martin Fakhrizadeh was so important that it was not until Netanyahu showed his picture that there were any photographs available of him. It was an effort by Iran to protect him from assassins, a sort of protective shield around him that sadly was evaded by well-prepared terrorists. Mind you, the mainstream media will continue to tell you that it is unclear who is behind the assassination, just like they did when Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was assassinated in Iraq. However, it does not take a genius to figure out that it was ordered by Netanyahu with the help of U.S. intelligence just before Trump leaves office. Tensions will be driven high in West Asia because of this new Zionist adventure. Never mind reports that came out of the U.S. claiming Trump intends to strike some of Iran's R&D facilities before he leaves office. Trump and Netanyahu now have to stand on their tiptoes wondering, where or where will Iran retaliate for the purposeful act of terrorism against one of its top scientists inside its own capital? Martyr Fakhrizadeh's assassination is a major signal that Israel and the U.S. will not give up on preventing the country from obtaining any nuclear technology whatsoever. The Israeli message is loud and clear. No nuclear scientist is safe. However, the message of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei was louder. Iran will continue the martyr's scientific and technological efforts in all the sectors where he was active. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. After the assassination, the New York Times issued a report claiming that Martyr Fakhrizadeh, who headed the Iranian Defense Ministry's Organization of Defense Innovation and Research, was assassinated by Israel. Now, to discuss this issue with us from Tehran is Dr. Mohammad Merendi, professor at Tehran University. Thank you and condolences to you, Dr. Merendi. Now, prominent Iranian nuclear physicist Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh's name was mentioned multiple times in the presentation in 2008 by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. during which he repeated baseless claims about the Iranian nuclear program. Now, such blatant evidence against the Zionist regime of Israel compels the UNSC and the so-called international community, if you will, to condemn this act of terrorism. Do you think that this might actually become a possibility?
Iran doesn't have any expectations. Condemnations really don't do much good when a crime has been carried out. The only way to really make the aggressor refrain from committing similar crimes again is for them to suffer the consequences. Mm-hmm. But the European Union, the British, Western governments, none of them condemned it. The European Union called it a criminal act, but there was no condemnation, and there will be repercussions. If you recall, when the British regime claimed that Russian double agent was attacked in England or poisoned in England, even though he didn't die, they made this a huge issue, and the whole of the EU, the United States, Canada, held 150 Russian diplomats. Result. In the case of Iran, there's condemnation. And in addition to that, there's no force behind the statements themselves. So Iran is forced to take initiative. Iran will definitely retaliate. But also, Iran will reduce its commitments to the nuclear deal as well as cooperate with the JCPOA. It retaliates against the regime for the attack, and Iran's reduced commitment to cooperation will be a response to Iran's attack and difference.
Dr. Mirendi, three U.S. officials have said that Israel was behind the assassination of Iranian scientist Martin Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, according to a report by the New York Times just hours after the assassination. We never had a doubt, to be honest, that the U.S. and Israel are the closest of allies and that have been sharing for a long time now intelligence regarding Iran in specific. However, this act of terrorism stirs a lot of concern about the infiltration of the Israeli Mossad inside of the Islamic Republic of Iran. How is this concern being dealt with within the Iranian government?
Well, this was not an Israeli operation. The Americans led the operation. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who gave the green light. They gave the logistical support through neighboring countries, just like they did under the Obama regime, mm-hmm. where they killed or murdered four Iranian scientists on different occasions. The United States was the real force back then. So back then, with Obama, who was helping the Israelis murder Iranians, and now it's Trump doing the same. So the Israelis on their own do not have the ability, and that's why Iran's response must be robust, both in punishing the Israeli regime, mm-hmm. but also punishing the Americans as well, in order to create a deterrent for prevent future acts of terrorism. And Iran's response to the United States will be ending its current, the carrying out of current obligations within their deal. Remember, the Europeans and Americans are not abiding by any of their commitments. But the Iranians are still abiding by some of their commitments. That will probably come to an end. And the International Atomic Energy Agency oversight will decrease significantly. So in this way, Americans will see that terrorist attack will have negative consequences. And the Israeli regime will see that terrorist attack will have negative consequences. But it is difficult for Iran, obviously, to fight against the constant attempts to undermine the country's sovereignty by position of the country along by the great regime and dictatorships in our region that support is China and also the person. That's
true. Well, Dr. Morandi, less than 24 hours after the incident, we have people from all walks of life gathering outside the Iranian parliament to condemn the assassination, which they view as a as grave as the U.S. Assassinating the top Iranian general commander Qasem Soleimani in January 2020. What do you think are the options for Iran in resolving this issue, which quickly became a public opinion issue?
Well, this was an act of war, and that's why people were so angry. And the Iranian government senior military officials, whether General Soleimani and other commanders, like the general who was assassinated a couple of days ago, all of them were the defense, they constituted the defense lines of the country. They constituted Iran's defenses against chaos in this region. The Americans and their regional allies have destroyed so much of Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Yemen, Lebanon, Palestine or Gaza, and to the north of Iran, we see instability. So these generals and these senior officials are what have preserved stability in this country, despite the fact that the United States has shown such great animosity and hostility towards the country. So there is no option but to give a harsh response to the act of war. What will that response be? I'm sure it will be lethal, but I have no idea what sort of response the Iranian military or the Iranian intelligence services will give. I'm not privy to that sort of information. But what I do know is that there will be another response, and that is decreased cooperation with regards to the nuclear program in Iran, and an expansion of Iran's nuclear program. Mm-hmm. In other words, this will be the second punishment, where the Americans and the Europeans will learn that by hurting Iran, they act in their actions are effectively detrimental to their own interests.
Well, Dr. Morandi, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has called on Iranian experts to preserve the scientific and technical legacy of the nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh and ordered the punishment of his assassins. We all remember the retaliation of for the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, which shook the American presence in Iraq. What are the prospects of something similar, maybe as a retaliation for Israel, as well as maybe the military presence of the U.S. in the region?
Well, the response to the murder of General Soleimani by the Americans was not the final response. It was a response. Mm-hmm. The leader said that that was only one step. So we still have score to settle. With regards to General Fakhrizadeh, I think the response will be the same. It will be comprised of different components. One component will be lethal, and another component will be a loss of access to Iran's nuclear program and an increased speed in the development of that program.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Mohammad Morandi, professor at Tehran University, for talking to us about the prospects of retaliation of what Iran will be possibly be doing against the assassins of Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Thank you for being with us. Now, please stay tuned. We'll talk in the next segment about how the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad is trying to impose its views on the Iraqi government and nation.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The U.S. Embassy in Baghdad again tries to impose its views on the Iraqi government and prevents the results of the investigation into the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Popular Mobilization Unit's Deputy Director Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis from reaching the Iraqi parliament. If this is not imposing colonial decisions on a sovereign Iraqi nation, I really don't know what is. U.S. blocks Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani's probe results in this following report.
It should not really come as a surprise that the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad is blocking the arrival to the Iraqi parliament of the results of investigations into the January terrorist attack on Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the second in command of Iraq's popular mobilization units. The investigation into the attack began from the first moment of the assassination, and the Iraqi judiciary dealt with that incident as a criminal act that took place on Iraqi land on the grounds that some of the victims are Iraqis. Earlier in July, a conclusion by the United Nations described the U.S. assassination of the Iranian commander as unlawful. No surprise there either, as the U.N. cannot say more than that, or else it won't be a U.S. puppet anymore, and that is technically not possible. Meanwhile, the way the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad is imposing its views on the Iraqi government and preventing the results of the investigation into the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis from reaching parliament simply shows that the U.S. still considers itself as the High Commissioner of Iraq. It seems the memo of the Iraqi parliament issuing a bill to force the U.S. out of the country has not reached the U.S. Embassy yet, or so they would like to think. However, this is what the different Iraqi resistance factions of the Popular Mobilization Units have been warning from. The Popular Mobilization Units has declared several times in the past few months that it will no longer tolerate the U.S. occupation, be it in the form of military occupation or political one. It seems the U.S. is not willing to take these warnings seriously unless and until a full-fledged confrontation occurs in the country, shaking it to its core. Mind you, not only Iraq will be affected by such a scenario, but all the U.S. troops illegally residing all across the region of West Asia will be feeling the heat of such a confrontation.
Now with us to discuss this issue is Joaquin Flores, who is editor at Forced Rus. Thank you very much for being with us, Joaquin. Now, it's like as if the United States is revolting against the Iraqi sovereignty here and the Iraqi people as well within their own country by disrupting the track of a probe of the investigation of the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Deputy Director of the Popular Mobilization Forces, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. What do the Americans want to hide? I mean, they already took full responsibility of the assassination already.
Well, that is an excellent question, and thank you, Marwa. Look, there is nothing to hide here, and that's what's very interesting, and I think that your question is a fantastic one, because really what we're looking at is not only the symbolism of the United States basically showing that they are in control of this process in Iraq, but I suspect that there is something else going on, which is the fact that the response that we have seen from Iraqi lawmakers, which has been a correct one, is also very predictable, and one that the Americans would have and could have, and I think did predict. And those are the questions that we have to really dig into, because, you know, the United States could have very easily kept its one report over here, that its internal report, perhaps showing the role of Israel, perhaps showing and revealing some aspect of their own operations in these assassinations, including that of Abu Mahandis, which absolutely is in the interest of Iraqi governance. On the other hand, they did not produce a fake report or a redacted or edited report. They just said, we're not going to show you the report. So this, obviously gives a greater strength and greater cause to the resistance to occupation, which I suspect very much is aimed towards that goal of actually shifting things away from the diplomatic end and really actually saying to Iraq, you need to have a stronger alliance with Iran in order to reject any future U.S. occupation, which sounds strange at first glance, except that in the United States, we are in a period of interregnum between two kings, if you will. So it looks like the Trump administration may be trying to track or produce along any possible options that a Biden administration may have, by which I mean under Biden we will see, of course, the return of ISIS and al-Qaeda activities very strongly in Iraq and in Syria.
Well, Joaquin, 2 days after the assassination back in January 2020, the Iraqi lawmakers approved a bill demanding the withdrawal of all foreign troops, military forces led by the United States from their country. Now, the U.S. has yet to abide by this bill. Some U.S. officials even claimed that their troops will only change location from Baghdad to Kurdistan, the northern part of the country. What options do you think Iraq has in the event that the new U.S. administration decides to actually just relocate instead of withdrawing the troops?
I think that any potential incoming administration, if that is what happens, we are still, of course, about 20 days away or 15 days away from knowing who the next president will be. But that said, if in the event of a Biden administration, we will see the return of ISIS, al-Qaeda activities very strongly. And while Iran may be looking towards a rapprochement with Iran regarding the JCPOA, that is a two-pronged and very duplicitous plan of Atlanticism to entrap and ensnare Iran in a different route. So when we look at what Iraq's response will be, it is again predictable. They want Iraq to say, this just proves that we need to double down on PMU, we need to increase support to actually and orient ourselves towards removing the U.S. occupation, and that we are going to make maybe declarations that there's a military possibility for this, which we have already seen. And I'm afraid that this falls right into the script that they had desired that Iraq's response to be, because like I said, they could